Breaking news today on Seculo is there's a major Trump win at the Supreme Court.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo, folks. We can now cover the debate. But there is a major decision out of the Supreme Court this morning that affects one of the debaters last night, President Trump, and Jack Smith, especially when it relates to the charges that were brought in Washington, D.C., the criminal charges against President Trump in Washington, D.C. Now, President Trump was not the one who brought this case. Another January 6th defendant did. But it directly impacts two of the four charges that Jack Smith brought against President Trump related to January 6th. So what did the Supreme Court say? The Supreme Court said that if you're going to charge someone like President Trump with a conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding or the obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, it has to be like documents. It has to be something really related to the proceeding itself. It's not speech. This is a win for the freedom of speech and liberty. We filed in this case because we thought this would be devastating to, again, those who were the right to protest. That isn't justifying what happened on January 6th. That isn't saying you can go in and trespass. Of course, those other charges against other defendants are different. They don't throw out all those charges. But what this does is say that there's no, if this charge doesn't apply to someone who did that, it certainly doesn't apply to someone who gave a speech and people said, well, I think that speech said we should go down to the Capitol and protest. And then it gets out of hand and people start going in. President Trump comes out and said, don't do that. And now, like we heard in the debate last night, he offered the 10,000 troops, but he could not authorize that. Nancy Pelosi would have to, or the mayor of D.C. And notice there was no pushback. No one called him a liar about that because Nancy Pelosi said no to that offer of the 10,000 troops, and so did the mayor of D.C. President Trump knew there were a lot of people coming, like he said, to Washington, and we probably need a crowd control at a massive level because of this. It's a it's a hot button issue. But those who had the authority to release the offer from President Trump would not do it. Now you might say, okay, how does this affect the rest of the case? Because there are four charges. The other four charges are really weak. The first is a conspiracy to defraud the United States, another kind of broad, I think overly broad charge. And the fourth charge was conspiracy against rights. So those aren't impacted by this, except for without the two key charges on obstructing an official proceeding. My dad's going to join us in the next segment of the broadcast to break it down exactly how this impacts President Trump. But how does it impact Jack Smith? He can't bring those two charges. He would have to start over with a grand jury and somehow try to bring charges that were related to how the Supreme Court interpreted those laws. And we'll go through, again, the much more limited interpretation of the obstruction of a congressional meeting. So what they said is basically the obstruction of evidence statute, that it was interpreted so broadly by the district court in D.C. that so much protected activity would be subject to 20-year prison sentences. So this is a huge day for President Trump with the victory at the debate. I mean, I think everyone agreed on that.
Yeah.
And it's a very bad day for President Biden and a very bad day for Jack Smith.
I think people need to know also the ACLJ, we filed in this case.
Yes, we did. Yep. I want to make sure, we filed because of the First Amendment rights, exactly what I just read from the case, because of its devastating effect on legal activity that would then be subject to 20 years in prison if a prosecutor decided, I don't like your viewpoint at your protest, so I'm going to say, well, it was outside a city council meeting, it was outside Congress, and it was really loud, and so you obstructed a official proceeding by Congress. The court said, no, can't do that. So again, if those cases were moving slow in Washington, D.C., they're even moving slower now. And what does this impact? You know, this Life Week, our final day of that, saw that as part of the debate last night. We'll talk about that as well. Support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. We still celebrate the 2-year anniversary of overturning Roe. We'll be right back to break all of it down for you. Sekulow. We wanted you to start getting in your calls on the debate last night. We've got lots of clips to play. Again, you know, quick overview. I was not someone who put a lot of, I wouldn't bet a lot. I'd say 24 hours ago that Joe Biden was going to be replaced as the nominee. And now I believe that that's a real option. And I think the key is, where are we kind of post next week? Big holiday, July 4th is in the middle of next week. So kind of look at it next week. And are Democrats still talking about this? Are they still worried about this? Are they still putting in an apparatus in place to put that pressure campaign on Joe Biden in a public way like they did in a freak out last night? I mean, they made it public last night. They didn't keep it amongst themselves at all. It was out even before the debate was over from these major Democrats. If it carries through the July 4th holiday, and we can get into it later about how that could happen and how it would work, I think then it's very, very serious. And it's now legitimate to talk about whether or not President Trump is even going to be running against Joe Biden. And I don't think, by the way, he's going to be running against Kamala Harris either. We'll explain that as well. But we'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. My dad, Jay Sekulow, our chief counsel, is joining us. And Dad, we explained just briefly in the first segment of the broadcast the Fisher decision out of the U.S. Supreme Court, which a big decision on the two charges that have been brought against President Trump by Jack Smith related to January 6th.
So this is a decisive defeat for the special counsel, Jack Smith, and an overwhelming victory for the petitioner in the case, who was a police officer, and the president, who's been charged two of the four counts related to this obstruction of an ongoing act of Congress. Well, a majority of the court, 6-3, so it was a lopsided decision in favor of both the First Amendment here and statutory interpretation. But let me tell you the unusual thing here. Justice Barrett sided with the liberal members of the court, but Justice Brown sided with, in fact, the conservative members of the court, and that's how you end up with 6-3. Chief Justice Roberts said the Solicitor General acknowledged an oral argument that under the government's interpretation, a peaceful protester could be conceivably charged for violating 1512C2, which carries a 20-year sentence. And even lobbyists could be brought into the scope of the statute that Jack Smith was trying to interpret. By the way, typical Jack Smith overcharging, overreaction. But listen to the concurring opinion of Justice Jackson. Again, appointed by who? President Biden. So they're not going to be able to argue this is the six conservatives. She said, in the United States of America, men are not subjected to criminal punishment because their conduct offends our patriotic emotions or thwarts a general purpose sought to be affected by a specific command which they have not disobeyed, nor they can be held guilty of offenses which the statutes have admitted to define and condemn. Our commitment to equal justice and the rule of law requires the courts to faithfully apply criminal laws as written, even in periods of national crisis, and even when the conduct alleged is abhorrent. And she went on to say, notwithstanding all of this, this court's task is to determine what conduct is prescribed by the law, and clearly this was not. Now, this also has a huge ramification, Jordan, for the president's case, because two of the four charges relate to exactly this point. It's exactly the same statute.
Yeah, I mean, and there's they were relying on his speech, and this is exactly what they were talking about today, is the kind of idea of speech that, and you said, like in Judge Jackson's opinion as well, she was talking about how even, you know, a peaceful protester, so someone just giving a speech at a rally, would be subject to this, and that's what Jack Smith thought. But now, because of the way they defined it, and this is how they defined it, to prove a violation of this law, the government has to show the defendant impaired the availability or integrity for use in official proceeding. It's about records, documents, objects, and other things used in a official proceeding. So, Dad, a lot of legal commentators think these two charges fall now for Jack Smith, and if he wanted to bring anything similar, he'd have to go back to the grand jury with a different charge, a more serious charge, actually.
No way that's going to happen either, because the Washington grand jury has expired once the indictment was issued. They'd have to retool up a grand jury, start a new proceeding. It's not going to happen. There's two charges left, and I'm telling you what we're going to see in the next day or next week. And that's going to be, I suspect, the Supreme Court's going to take our argument that there was limited presidential immunity for official acts and send the case back down to the trial court judge to determine if the scope of what the president was doing on election integrity was deemed to be an official act within the parameters of what a president does. And I think the answer to that is yes. So this is a huge win for the president, a huge defeat for Jack Smith. Again, this is the overcharge guy. Remember, we worked on the McDonald case, Governor McDonald's. Same thing there, these ridiculous interpretations of the statute. And it comes back to haunt him every time. He can't get it right. That's why he lost his case against John Edwards. That's why he lost the first trial that he did against Senator Menendez. He's an equal party offender. He comes up with these crazy theories, and the courts never allow them.
You know, I think that, again, this is, it almost got ahead of Jack Smith because he didn't, it wasn't the court rebuking him, but now it's a pre-rebuke. They did hold it until after the debate. I mean, when you look at the other charges, too, in this case that would survive this, that weren't related to this, they were conspiracy to defraud the U.S., conspiracy against rights. Those both look like also two charges that if they ultimately got to the Supreme Court would say, you know, that's, you're looking at it too broadly.
Yeah, I think, I think those two charges are in jeopardy because of the direct challenge that the president made in the brief we filed, arguing limited presidential immunity for official acts. I think those, Jordan, I think this, the entire proceeding against the president as it relates to the January 6th stuff received today a fatal blow. It's done.
So
recovery.
So if that receives a fatal blow and the case, the classified documents case, certainly appears like it's going that way. I mean, it's going nowhere fast. And now with the FBI having to admit they've lost some of the documents, misplaced them, they're out of order, they're not on the glossary. I mean, you really go and you look to the remaining really state charges, and the ones out of New York, as really what's left against Donald Trump and what they might try to do. There's not going to be a lot except for that sentencing date. I think that's the key thing. Democrats and the left are hoping will somehow bail out Joe Biden's performance here, is that when Donald Trump is sentenced before the next debate, obviously, this happens in July, and before the Republican convention, that will somehow overtake Joe Biden's performance. But as you just heard my dad say, a fatal blow to Jack Smith's case out of Washington, D.C. And, Dad, we did file in this case the ACLJ because of exactly they said. I mean, basically a peaceful protester. Someone that's outside, the Capitol, or one of our staff talking to a legislative staff saying, this is how we think you should, interpret this or make sure this provision is included in a law on life, that somehow that could be, again, obstructing an official proceeding of Congress, and that is unconstitutional. And the court agreed, both conservatives and liberals and a liberal on the court.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, the fact that Justice Brown joined the Chief Justice opinion is going to speak volumes, Jordan, and here's why. They're not going to be able to argue this is the six conservative Supreme Court justices that Trump appointed, and they just did their duty. In fact, on the contrary, Amy Coney Barrett sided with the liberals. Justice Ketanji Jackson Brown went with Justice Brown. Jackson went with the conservatives. So there you have it. When you have Justice Jackson going with the conservatives and Barrett going with liberals, they're not going to be argue this political split. The law was applied. The law was applied in a bizarre way, and the Supreme Court said, we're not allowing it, period. You cannot criminalize free speech. Again, as they acknowledged, First Amendment activities, peaceful protesters could conceivably be charged with 1512C2. We're not going to allow it. That means that charge falls against President Trump. And it'll be very interesting to see how the Biden administration spins it. And they got enough problems after the debate last night. But I'll tell you, this was quite a win for the president and a huge, huge defeat. A strategic failure on behalf of Jack Smith. Fatal, is my view.
That also a major case that, again, the media has a little tougher time explaining because it's not as clear, but legally maybe the biggest case out of the Supreme Court in this entire term is the Chevron doctrine is overturned. And this idea that you go to the administration for gray areas and let them and these agencies interpret laws passed by Congress where there's gray areas and the court is not going to usually step in, has now reversed that opinion and said, no, if it's a gray area, the court is stepping in.
This is a huge thing because what it was allowing was unelected bureaucrats to actually make law. And that's what I wrote a book called Undemocratic, and that's what it was about. And the Chevron doctrine being put to rest is like the lemon test and the Establishment Clause put to rest. Finally, we're going to have it done right. It's a very good day at the Supreme Court, no doubt about it.
I mean, this was, thank you, Dan, for joining us. This again, folks, I mean, when you're talking about the deep state and the bureaucratic state, the administrative state, the unelected bureaucrats, this now allows challenges to those, their interpretations, and they don't go in with the idea that usually we're just going to side with their interpretation because Congress left it gray. That's no longer the position of the U.S. Supreme Court, which takes away the power of the administrative. We'll be right back on Seculo. Welcome back to Seculo. So we briefed you and we updated you on those major Supreme Court decisions. We want to turn now to what I think a lot of people want to talk about, which is the presidential debate. I will say this. The moderators, I want to say this, did not act as though I thought they might. They always have the option to do a decent job. And what they did last night was ask questions. They did not bail Joe Biden out, for the most part, when he was stumbling. In fact,
or when they left too much
Dana
time.
Bash pointed out, okay, you've got another like 50 seconds left. You got to have something else to say on this major question, right? And then that, again, so kind of pushing him even into Joe Biden. They weren't calling President Trump a liar. I mean, you know, Joe Biden did, but that's the role of the debate, right? They let them go at each other. Don't have the moderators become part of the debate. So I think the issues they brought up were fair. They brought up most of the big issues that are concerning people, including immigration, including, of course, number one, the economy and inflation, how those all tie together, and foreign wars going on, Putin and kind of the U.S. standing in the world. So starting there, the idea, again, I think that would both, you know, fairly treat. And I will say, I think where Joe Biden failed is that they didn't prep him on what it's like to do a debate without an audience. But President Trump doesn't need a prep on that, because people who do a lot of television, like I'm doing right now with you and talking into the camera, understand you talk into the camera and you kind of have to envision lots of people. The idea that you're talking to lots of people, that it's not just an endless void, so you can't just go wherever you want. And even when you're not talking, you have to at least think for a few minutes at a time, because they told them there would be a split screen. So that you knew you would be on the screen some of the time when your opponent was talking, that you don't just do this and look down and or stare off into the abyss.
Mouth agape.
I want to start with this clip, which is also a video clip as well. So for those of you watching, but it works too if you're listening as well. Let's play it.
Making sure that we continue to strengthen our healthcare system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the. With dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump?
Well, he's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
I mean, you know, this, what does that, I mean, I feel like this should be a hashtag.
It's a bad start a few minutes
in. That happened within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I believe it was in the first 10 minutes, and it really, there were moments where I thought, okay, he's rallying, we're going to have a recovery moment, and then it would, you know, veer off into the distance, and it would become this sort of mess. I was watching it with my children who had not really watched. They were excited to watch the debate, and they were sitting around, and it became a comedy show. It became my kids goofing on this whole thing, whether it was the content, whether it was golf, or whether it really was the faces. It was after Biden. They couldn't understand Biden. They always talk about they can't understand him. But really, it was the off-screen, split-screen faces of just mouth hanging open. And they were all goofing on him. And I felt bad. My son at one point goes, I just feel bad. And I think that's what you saw. A bunch of people who felt bad. Now, I am fully convinced the way that, as I watched the CNN, I watched the Fox News coverage of the CNN. I'm like, I'm giving Fox my ratings. But then I flipped over because I was like, I know what Fox is going to say. Fox is going to say Trump ran away with it and won, because he did. So I was like, let's flip over and see what CNN has to say. It felt a little too calculated that all of them, the entire panel, all of a sudden were calling for this guy for Joe Biden to step down or resign.
Right.
It was pretty wild to see. I've honestly never seen anything like that where there wasn't one person on that panel who said, hold on, guys, maybe it was just a bad night. He is the president. Maybe we should get, they were all, I mean, Van Jones was crying again, saying, you know, I love this man, but essentially what we've been saying for a long time, which is at some point it becomes elder abuse.
Yeah.
And when they start saying that, you go, okay, was this all calculated to do this early debate, to do an early debate so they could showcase, now there's proof, now there's evidence that the DNC or the Biden administration, the Biden campaign can't hide from.
No.
And then you go in and you replace him.
And I feel like now you're just being mean by questioning his mental competency.
Right.
I actually think the 25th Amendment, which is in place, you know, if the president has to like have a surgery or had a medical event that you need to remove them, but they're not, they didn't pass away.
Yeah.
It could legitimately be implemented against President Biden. If that, remember how they asked, I think it was, they asked Vice President Harris that, is this how he acts?
Yeah.
Because if this is how he acts as president, if this is how he acts as president, we have a problem in the United States. It's bigger than politics. But here's the issue: the Democrats don't want to put Kamala Harris in as president. So how could they get rid of Joe Biden, but not have Kamala Harris be the nominee against President Trump? And by the way, if you're President Trump right now and the Trump campaign, you have to be thinking leading up to the Republican convention. Do we have to start thinking about that we're not even going to be running against Joe Biden, but we won't really know who until after their convention, which is not until mid-August, and then a few months before the general election. I think you have to start now preparing for two or three people, potentially. We got time to talk to that, but here's how it would work.
Yeah.
You go to the convention. Those are all Biden delegates. On the first vote, they have to vote for Biden. Biden then turns down the nomination. He still remains president.
Yeah.
So that means Vice President Harris does not jump to be president. She could decide then to put her name in the hat, but we know she's not going to win that. So on the floor of the delegates, I think they have 3,000 roughly delegates. They have some super delegates. You need roughly somewhere around 1,700 and something votes. So if President Biden didn't accept the nomination, people would then nominate others. And ultimately you'd have a vote. And once someone ultimately got to that key number, that would be the nominee. And I mean, I think you could figure out the handful of people
that
are going to be looking at it. It's Gavin Newsom is leading that charge. Gretchen Whitmer. I think that there's probably, they talked about Sherrod Brown out of Ohio.
Michelle Obama, the big one.
I think she wouldn't have to, if Biden did that in the first round, it's hers.
Right.
And it's hers.
And by the way, for the Trump campaign, Joe Biden is the best person they should be running against right now.
Listen, may have been, in a sense, President Trump did so good, and Joe Biden did so bad that President Trump may not be running. He may have debated Joe Biden out of the campaign. He may have defeated him last night because one, when we play this bite about the golf, do we have time for it? How long is it?
I'm not sure how long it is.
Well, 30 seconds. Let's play this. I want to play it because this is interesting, a difference in how President Trump people would have thought he would have reacted. Take a listen.
Look, I'd be happy to have a driving contest with him. I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. But by the way, I told you before, I'm happy to play golf if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
That's the biggest lie, that he's a 6 handicap of all.
I was an 8 handicap.
Yeah.
8. But I have, you know how many?
I've seen you swing. I know you swing.
Let's not act like children.
I mean, that's a different. See, President Trump was answering a question. The reason he came up is they questioned his physical strength, and he talked about because there's lots of video out there of him playing golf recently. I mean, you could probably see him playing golf 2 days ago if he played. So he puts it out there. And so he used that as an example. Then Joe Biden's trying to argue about being a 6 handicap, which, I mean, if you can't stand on the stage, you definitely aren't a 6 handicap.
Maybe an eight.
Which means he didn't know what he was talking about. And the fact that it was President Trump who came and said, let's stop acting like children.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a very different kind of moment for President Trump. And that's the kind of moment maybe people who are in the middle of the road think, you know what, he is different than what I thought.
Yeah.
And obviously, behind closed doors leads the country in a different way than maybe the caricature. We'd be right back on Seculo. Support the work of the ACLJ. Final day of life week at ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo, folks. So a major win for really President Trump and a lot of probably January 6th, those who might be even in prison or were in prison over their January 6th and being part of the protests. The Supreme Court overturning one of the charges against the January 6th protester on obstruction of official proceeding. Now, that's key for President Trump because two of the four charges that were brought by Jack Smith against him were that charge, the conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, and a secondary charge relating to that charge, which is obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. And what the court said is, no, speech, you know, going to a rally, being a protester, even being a lobbyist, the Solicitor General of the United States said, even, you know, following legal activities, peaceful protest, peaceful assembly, even, you know, being a registered lobbyist and going and saying, or what we do at the ACLJ with advocacy on issues, that could somehow be, under their view of the statute, so broadly interpreted as to mean that could be an obstruction of Congress and an official proceeding, and thus you'd be subject to 20 years in prison whenever the DOJ didn't like your speech, didn't like your issue advocacy. The court said, of course, we can't do that under the First Amendment. That's not how the laws work in the United States. It's not even what the law says. So what did the court say there? It said, if you're going to prove a violation of this law, and I can't see how this applies now to Donald Trump at all, the government must show the defendant impaired the availability or integrity for use in official proceedings of records, documents, objects, or other things used in an official proceeding or attempted to do so. As my dad said earlier on the broadcast, they believe this is a fatal blow to Jack Smith's D.C. case against President Trump, the one of the two cases. And then, of course, the debate last night. And Will, I want to go to you on this because there's one thing that's always key. And this is that when you turn off most presidential debates, whether there was a clear winner or loser, the commentators usually choose a partisan side and defend their guy. Last night, widespread agreement from everyone who had to be interviewed, even the Biden surrogates. Gavin Newsom himself had to admit it. He couldn't keep it up throughout the entire time he was interviewed. But all the host and commentators, the paid host and commentators, all agreed it was a horrible night for Joe Biden. And they were the ones who put out that these top Democrats are all considering now how to remove him.
That's right. And as you even said on the broadcast yesterday, is that we would really know the true winner by how both sides were spinning it.
Right.
And there was no real spin from the left media. And CNN, I think, took 2 hours talking about how they could replace Joe Biden on the ticket. But, you know, you always get these little cheat sheets of the day after in the political papers of, you know, who are the winners and losers. And sometimes it's broader than just the candidates. I think the biggest winner last night was Special Counsel Robert Hur, because his report, I think, is vindicated that people called unfair. And maybe the biggest loser is the White House press secretary, who was trying to say that the videos of him looking old and feeble are cheap fakes. That, I think, everyone now knows is the reality of what we're dealing with. But listen to this supercut of reaction from both CNN and MSNBC right after the debate. This is Byte 96.
That was painful. I love Joe Biden. I work for Joe Biden. He didn't do well at all. He did not do well at all.
His biggest issue that he had to prove to the American people was that he had the energy, had the stamina, and he didn't do that.
He had one thing he had to accomplish, and that was reassure America that he was up to the job at his age. And he failed at that tonight.
Right now, as we speak, there is a deep, a wide, and a very aggressive panic in the Democratic Party.
I mean, right there. That's immediate reaction. That wasn't like 45 minutes in. So they didn't have to, that's that kind of what your gut instinct call. That wasn't, hey, how does, it wasn't even like what I said, which is we'll really know the effects of it post the July 4th holiday week of how did it affect the voters, how many people tuned in, did the people tuning in, were they basically partisans who already, they're going to vote Democrat, whoever is on that ballot, and they're going to vote Republican. Because what I think Joe Biden has actually got a problem with, and what Democrats have a problem with, is you keep Joe Biden. And this is how he continues to do. He continues to stumble on the campaign trail, continues to stumble through speeches, and, you know, look weak, maybe even pulls out of the next debate in September. He's got to go through that. did the people that would usually go in and vote D just not go and vote at all because he seems so incompetent? That's a real problem now. All right, welcome back to Secular. We're joined by Rick Rennell. Rick was on with us yesterday. Very different, I think, our conversation now. Rick, I want to play this right off the bat. It starts again, and do we have the bite number, Will? It's bite number...
Bite 94.
But let's play bite 94, and then we'll go to Rick for his comments on this, and I think it sets it up well.
What I've done since I've changed the law, what's happened, I've changed it in a way that now you're in a situation where there are 40% fewer people coming across the border illegally. That's better than when he left office. And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look, we had the safest border in the history of our country.
All right, so there we go. Rick, I mean, listen, about 5 minutes in, actually about 90 seconds in, you realized Joe Biden had a serious problem and that the way Joe Biden has been characterized by the right, which people have been careful of because they said, you know, you're not just want to make fun of somebody because they have a speech impediment problem. No, I think now it's fair to say the competency, whether or not he's even competent to be president of the United States right now, is a fair question.
Look, I learned a long time ago to separate, my humanity of dealing with people in my life and having a big heart and being kind to people personally. But politics is a completely different issue. This is a serious sport. This is running our country. These are serious issues. And I don't feel any sympathy for the Democrats and Joe Biden whatsoever. They did this to themselves. They created for 3.5 years a system with the media telling us that we were watching deep fakes, telling us that we were ridiculous. We were shamed. We were finger wagged. And now suddenly, after an open border and wars and grocery prices off the charts and gas prices completely way too high for anyone to be able to afford them, all of a sudden now, they want to tell us that Joe Biden isn't fit. We've been saying this for 3.5 years, and they've called us liars. They've literally mocked us. I don't feel one iota of sympathy for what they've done to the country. They don't care about the middle class. They still have all of these radical ideas. They are still pushing an open border. I saw the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, on MSNBC this morning, literally just defending Joe Biden as great and all of these policies. And he was talking about climate change and all these other issues that they needed to push. They did this radical lurch to the left themselves, and they must be defeated. Whoever is at the top of the ticket, and I'll finish with this, their top of the ticket is going to be Joe Biden. They've got 7 weeks left. They're not going to be able to find a new candidate, have enough money for that new candidate, and also tell all the other people who want to run for president to sit down and wait and not push Kamala Harris aside.
Yeah.
They have a dilemma that they did to themselves.
I mean, Rick, this is a question a lot of people had, which is I didn't even think before. I always agreed with you. There was like no chance. But then we saw Democrats and liberals publicly going through the procedures last night. Do you think that they were, was that their, because you said it was kind of like their panic mode, and again, no sympathy for them, but they were the ones actually explaining to us, how they could do this at the convention and not have Kamala Harris and go past her because people don't really like her. I mean, they're having the discussion, but they're having it publicly, which I think is great for President Trump. So if you're advising him, do you have to advise and say, listen, this could get weird, or do you just say stick on Joe Biden?
Look, I think it's too late for them. These are all the conversations they should have had a year ago. But now that they're in panic mode because they couldn't tell us that we were wrong, that we were watching a deep fake last night. We had hundreds of millions of people watching around the world. And my phone blew up, Jordan, from people who are not innately political, people who haven't been paying attention like you and I. people who just simply tuned in because they're interested, but they're too busy to watch the day to day. And so there was a collapse from those people. A lot of those people may be independent or, you know, not that regular of voters, but they saw a really stark contrast last night. And it was a total collapse. It's too late for them to replace Joe Biden. So their initial Democrats coming out and saying, oh, my gosh, that was a disaster. By the time they got up this morning and they heard from Morning Joe for 3 hours, you know, Mika this morning signed off Morning Joe by saying, you know, get with it, get behind Joe Biden, stop crying. That's literally how she finished. She started the morning by saying this was a disaster of epic proportions. What are we going to do? Maybe we should shove Joe off the stage. By the end of the morning, lots of texts, lots of people. We're talking just like the governor of Pennsylvania, which was shut up and get in line.
Yeah, I mean, Newsom said it last night. He admitted, you know, his debate, we've all had bad debates, but we all need to get in line behind. Yeah, he said the exact same thing. We need to double down our work, do that much more. It's like he honestly said, well, basically, we're going to have 100, going to send 100 people out like me across the country to defend Joe Biden instead of Joe Biden. Will, I know you had a question for Rick.
Yeah, Rick, this was something that came up in the debate, and there was many times in the debate it seemed like President Biden brought up things that you would think a politician wouldn't bring up because they were actually negative about his record. But this is one that I know we've spent a lot of time talking about, the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. You were a part of the film series that Logan hosted about the failed and disastrous withdrawal. And this was such a puzzling moment to me, not just because it was factually inaccurate, but because he brought it up. But I want to play Byte 107 for you and get your reaction.
You know, when he was president, they were still killing people in Afghanistan. He didn't do anything about that. When he was president, we were still finding ourselves in a position where you had a notion that we were this safe country. The truth is, I'm the only president this century that doesn't have any this decade, that don't have any troops dying anywhere in the world like he did.
Rick, what do you take with that, especially him completely overlooking the 13 brave Americans that were killed in his disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan?
Look, the Democrats have been able to get away with this for years because they control the media in Washington. So they can say outlandish lies because they're totally protected. Last night, there was a collapse because in front of everybody, we saw that the emperor doesn't have any clothes. And so all of now the propagandists in Washington who are trying to pretend like the regime is fine, now they're being attacked. I saw a whole bunch of people literally mocking the reporters who are trying to tell us that all is fine. There is a revolt from regular people on Washington, D.C. right now. I think the story last night is the four-year lie that all of Washington, D.C. has been telling us. The people paid attention last night, and they clapped back. This is going to be a blowout. They are stuck with Joe Biden, and they deserve it. They've lied to us for 4 years that everything is fine. Look, they're going to try to tell us that the border is now closed because Joe Biden just issued an EO, you know, a week ago. I mean, these people are complete liars and panderers. They got to be crushed.
Yeah, and we've gone through how that executive order, I mean, the numbers, that it's like it's a joke. And I think, you know, President Trump said that last night. It's not going to do anything, and that's why you're not going to see any major change to anything. I want to go to Kimberly's call, actually, and get Rick's response, because it ties into what you were talking about, Will, as well, on line four. Hey, Kimberly, welcome to Secular. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I am a military wife, and my husband was over in Afghanistan. When President Biden withdrew so abhorrently, disgustingly, and honestly, there's so many words, but not to take accountability for the 13 lives that were lost when they withdrew, like they did, and all the people that died, oh my God. What's wrong with him?
Well, I mean, this, Rick, goes to the point. Kimberly, I want to thank you for your service, too, as a military spouse. You don't always get as much credit as you should. And you talk about your husband's service. And Rick, that was the first thing I thought of, obviously the first thing President Trump thought of, too. The idea that was one of the most embarrassing days in U.S. history, at least that we've seen on camera, on air, you know, in modern history. And the fact that Joe Biden just glazed over the fact that we all saw it. It was a horrible attack of 13 young troops who were put in a very bad situation that was going out of control under his watch, and he didn't even acknowledge their service and their lives. And I, you know, that to me, it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. If you're an American, is just kind of infuriating.
Well, I'm with Kimberly. I'm mad about it. I can't believe that the media have not condemned him and criticized him. He continues to get away with this pathetic answer, pretending like something happened that didn't. It's another deep fake, but it's from them.
Yeah. Rick, I appreciate you joining us on the show. I appreciate all of your insight into this. We're going to take more of your calls, folks. 1-800-684-3110. I think the key to this, you know, as Rick said, it's 7 weeks here with the Republican convention coming up, the Democrat convention coming up. We got a July 4th holiday. Are we going to see this pivot today from Democrats that, well, it was a bad debate, but we're going to go, you know, vote Democrat, vote Biden. We'll take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. So the issue of life last night came up. You know, it's Life Week here. We had a decision by the Supreme Court. I think we kind of explained it yesterday. It was a two-sentence decision, sending it back to the courts in Idaho because the law had changed in Idaho on what exactly the emergency room could do. And, I mean, you know, broadened out enough. And also the Biden administration said we're not looking for, a mental health exception post-Roe being overturned out of this existing federal law. So they both changed their opinions, so it goes back to court, even though the Supreme Court was briefed. Agree with that or not, it wasn't nearly the victory that they tried to spin it as when that opinion was uploaded for a few seconds online. So we explained that yesterday. Then, of course, you had the debate and a big discussion on abortion. And Democrats know. Listen, it's fair to say they've done very well on that issue and used it to their advantage politically. On ballot initiatives, we're talking about the one in Arizona we're working with Arizona Right to Life on, but also in the debate last night, I think they thought, okay, when we get to abortion, this is going to be a moment where Joe Biden scores the key points because this is when the soccer moms, the suburban moms who could vote for Trump but might vote for Biden on this issue really turned. And a lot of people then, after the show's commentary, said that was a draw. Trump brought it to a draw, which was a Democrat nightmare. Because you can't paint him in the corner as this extremist if he actually uses words. Let's play him.
And if I'm elected, I'm going to restore Roe v. Wade.
So that means he can take the life of the baby in the ninth month and even after birth, because some states, Democrat run, take it after birth. Again, the governor, former governor of Virginia, put the baby down, then we decide what to do with it. So he's willing to, as we say, rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month and kill the baby. Nobody wants that to happen, Democrat or Republican. Nobody wants it to happen.
You're lying. That is simply not true. The Roe v. Wade does not provide for that. That's not the circumstance. Only if a woman's life is in danger, she's going to die. That's the only circumstance in which that can happen. But we are not for late-term abortion, period, period, period.
Under Roe v. Wade, you have late-term abortion. You can do whatever you want, depending on the state. You can do whatever you want. We don't think that's a good thing. We think it's a radical thing. We think the Democrats are the radicals.
I mean, and even with some of the federal laws that were in place on certain late-term abortion procedures, there were other late-term. President Trump was right. Depending on the state you're in, this could be abortion till birth. I mean, and we've seen that in states like New York and others that have gotten, as Roe, the overturning of Roe didn't stop New York from doing things like that. Now, we've got a lot of people local watching right now, I don't even want to say it.
A lot of people right now watching on YouTube specifically, a lot of people on Rumble as well, on Facebook and all those. But on YouTube, we can always tell if there's a bunch of new people. There are a bunch of new people here right now. I'm going to encourage you right now. We do this broadcast each and every weekday and then tons of content throughout the week. Just hit that subscribe button. We really would appreciate it. Ring that bell, as they say. Hit that like, little thumbs up. All of those things help get this message out there. But also, if you're brand new, we'd love to have you as part of our family here. And of course, I see all the clowns coming. And as you know, I think yesterday kind of proved who the real clowns were in the situation. We've been lied to this entire time. The Democrats have been lying to their own people, saying that he was up for this challenge. Clearly wasn't. And when you hear that, when you hear the sort of pro-choice, I'd say the pro-abortion advocate saying, oh, we didn't win on that last night, when you really had the one moment that if you're a, look, for us as pro-lifers, it's different. But if you are a someone who is in the middle or is a pro-choice advocate. This was the moment that you could say, well, you're certainly not going to vote for Trump. And he came out as the moderate in the room. And that is wild.
And that's right. I watched the Young Turks last night to see what the far left was saying. Because, yes, we watched MSNBC and CNN. And while that's still more like mainstream
Not like the moderate left. Yeah.
Right. But then the Young Turks, about as far left as you can go. And the co-host on there literally said Trump won the night on abortion. He said it was so much further than the worst nightmare he could have thought up for the Democrats. Now, obviously, a lot of hyperbole there, but the fact that they're conceding that on that issue that should have been for them, like the ringer issue, they lost it.
I will say there is some breaking news. Joe Biden says he's not going to drop out, and he commits to a second debate with Trump.
Oh, there you go. So that could happen. And look, I think what people need to realize with the abortion debate is that Joe Biden has flip-flopped himself so majorly. He was actually one of the more pro-life Democrats for the majority of his career, but now kowtowing to the far left of his party.
And here, owns his party.
Take a listen. This takes you from the 80s up until now.
That's right.
There is an overwhelming universal criticism by proponents of pro-choice and opponents of pro-choice that Roe v. Wade was not a very well-reasoned decision. Most constitutional scholars do not offer that as an example of, whether they're for or against abortion, a decision that is well-written and well-reasoned. Not the conclusion, but the, you know, if it's not offered as a way to write a decision.
The fact is that the vast majority of constitutional scholars supported Roe when it was decided. Supported Roe. And that's this idea that they were all against it is just ridiculous.
So there you go, showing both sides of the coin here.
In the time period where he's literally a U.S. senator, when it's much closer to Roe.
Yeah, a decade, maybe probably within the decade.
Within seven, eight years. And he's telling us all the scholars saying it was wrongly decided based off the judicial opinion. And so, again,
Yeah, exactly. No, I was saying it's absolutely ridiculous. Let's take some quick calls here real quick. I'm sorry, a lot of you have been on hold for a long time. So try to keep it quick, but I'm sorry. Dan, North Carolina, you're up.
Discernment and wisdom. Trump has it. I heard a lot of people critiquing him for taking the debate because of the moderator and the CNN and the rules. But he didn't negotiate one bit. He accepted their terms, and we're all able to see them lying about Joe Biden. Even the commentators on CNN admitted it. They've been lying to the American people. The only way they saw that lie is because Trump was smart enough not to negotiate terms.
Well, Dan, I want to follow up. There were probably some terms negotiated here.
Well, I think there were a couple. One was initially standing. They were supposed to be seated, and I think the Trump said no. And then they even said, you can't even sit during breaks.
Yep.
You could never sit down. So there's no way that was the Biden campaign.
Yeah, let's take one more call.
Also, can I say this? The other one? I wonder if it was the Trump team that actually said no audience.
Maybe.
Because, as I said earlier, those of us who do TV, Donald Trump did a lot more of it than I've ever done. But I mean, literally, he's been a host of a major broadcast show. Understand how to talk to a camera like they're talking. They don't need an audience.
Right.
To almost have the same energy and feel like they're talking to his same as being at a rally.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is not that person, and you have to go through training to get there. And no one obviously trained him, and I'm not sure he would be even trainable at this point when you see his performance. But that, again, having that empty room feel hurt Joe Biden.
Oh, absolutely. Quickly, Joseph, line five, you got like 10 seconds. Go ahead with your comment.
I just wanted to say that this was all planned by the Democrats. They wanted him to bomb. The commentators didn't attack him, didn't protect him. It was all planned out. Yep. It was the only way they can get rid of him.
I think a lot of us feel that way.
The delegates to the convention are Biden delegates, the majority. So if they stick with Joe Biden on the first round of votes, which they have to, and he then hasn't been persuaded to step aside, he will be the nominee.
Yeah, man, but this guy fought his entire life to be president of the United States. It is not that easy to tell that person, sorry, you can't do this anymore, and you're polling at, 50-50 at this point still.
No.
So it's going to be tough. Look, I did want to encourage people right now. We are at the end of life week. Obviously, we're celebrating the 2-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe. So today's the last day. If you want to get that special victory for life lapel pin, and really, just support the work of the ACLJ. If you want that pin, great. It's over $60. You'll get it in the mail soon, so go ahead and do that. But any donation helps as we end Life Week, starting to wrap up the month of June. We encourage you to go support the work of the ACLJ on a regular basis as well. ACLJ.org/Life Week. Even next week, We're filing briefs at the Supreme Court to allow states to defund Planned Parenthood, be a part of it right now. And on Monday, we're in court defending sidewalk counselors in front of abortion clinics. You can be a part of this as well. And again, you'll get that special commemorative pin, Victory for Life. We'll talk to you next week on Seculo.